The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our best ever Wi-Fi all around your home, your world is limitless.
Dr. Keith Gaynor is a senior clinical psychologist, and we've spoken to him before, but it's a real pleasure to, it's been a while. Keith, welcome, nice to talk to you again.
Hi Ryan, it's lovely to be on.
Are you well? And you can answer this honestly as opposed to in an Irish way.
Well, I'm well, but I'm anxious.
Go on.
I think we probably all are anxious at the moment. There's this enormous virus out there. We don't know what's happening with it. We don't quite know if when a cure is going to come or what's going to happen next. So I think anxiety is probably a pretty normal reaction to a pretty abnormal state of affairs.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that what I'm so happy that you're on today about is to, we all talk about the new normal and all these hackneyed cliches, but let's normalise anxiety then today. Let's just say it's okay, because I think the minority, the lucky minority, are the ones who aren't feeling anxious. So can we talk, is it a spectrum, Keith? Are there some more prone to anxiety than others? Are we making it worse by acknowledging it, or are we actually making it better by talking about it?
So in normal times, so anxiety is a normal human emotion.
Yeah.
We feel happy, we feel sad, we feel anxious. If the human being feels threatened, then we get anxious. And that's a really normal reaction to being threatened. And if you can imagine, there's threat everywhere now for people. Going to the shops can be threatening for people now in a way that it wasn't 6 months ago. And so I think we're seeing loads of people who would never have been anxious before in any significant way, feeling very anxious now.
So what are the four chief reasons that we might be feeling a little more wary, frightened, anxious?
Well, I think the obvious one is the health risk.
Okay.
That lots of us are really worried for our own health, or we're worried for a loved one. No one wants to catch coronavirus and no one wants to bring it home.
Okay.
So that's a really clear one. Really, obviously, a huge amount of people have been impacted economically.
Yeah.
And we just know that there's whole industries have been devastated by this. You know this really well from the arts industry, but there's just people where the next job is coming from isn't clear. And there's great evidence from 2008 and the recession there that, you know, if you're being hit financially and you don't know how you're going to pay the mortgage, then your risk of mental health difficulties go up.
Sure. Isolation?
Well, I suppose the safest thing we can do is to separate and to isolate and to pull back. But we're humans. We're naturally kind of hang together. We want to be in groups.
Yeah.
We want to do things together. We build ourselves in families and towns and cities and tribes. And so actually being isolated is really, really difficult.
Yeah. It's a grotesque virus, isn't it, in the way it plays on the psychology as much as on the physicality of people's physiology. If it was a person, you'd say it was very nasty.
Exactly. If you think of prison, that the punishment in prison is just to isolate.
Yes, yes.
And that's a punishment in and of itself, just to be in a room on your own. And so, obviously, the things we need to do to be safe is to separate ourselves from people. But if you think that one of the most important things in our human language is a hug, and actually that's one of the things that's been taken away from us.
Yeah.
I'll tell you my own little story, and a little story.
Yeah, yeah.
But we had a little boy in April.
Congratulations, Keith.
Yeah, he was fantastic. Yeah. He's healthy and he's perfect. And we had a great run to the hospital and had to break every light and do all of those things that you have to do. And he was born, and I come out of the hospital a little while later. I'm kind of stuck in the car park at 4 a.m. And what do you do? And I headed over to my parents' house and had a cup of tea and didn't hug anybody.
Weird.
And it's just weird, exactly.
Mm. Were you the only dad in the car park, as a matter of interest?
No, there was a dozen people.
Really? In their cars?
Yeah.
Can't go in to see their...
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's pretty stark as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and look, I think everyone wants to keep the baby safe, everyone wants to keep the mum safe. So, you know, I think everyone's doing it very willingly.
Yeah.
But I have this slightly surreal situation of an empty car park and 12 cars and different lads either asleep or walking around them or on their phones or whatever.
Crikey. What has it done to our identities?
Well, if you think what makes us up, as people, it's often the things that we do, the people that we see, the things that we love, the things that we're committed to. So you might be a Dubs fan and you enjoy a pint with your mates once a month and you coach the under nines and, you know, you go into the office and you have a bit of crack. And You mightn't have lost your job and you mightn't be at health risk, but you might have lost all of those things. You're not going to the matches. You're not seeing your team. You're not coaching the team. You're not seeing your friends. And so bit by bit, our sense of ourselves gets chipped back. And I don't know, in your case, Ryan, what would it be like to be broadcasting from your back bedroom?
Yeah.
You might be doing the same show, but would it feel very different for you?
Yeah, if you're asking me actually the question, I'll tell you, honestly, yeah. I've been very fortunate in the sense that I never had to broadcast from my house at any point. I came in every single day, bar 2 weeks of quarantining. And even then I said, no, if I'm off, I'm off. So I'm not going to do the back, you know, room sort of thing. So I'm very lucky. But in answer to your question, if I had to stop broadcasting, if I had to stop, if I was a barman, I had to stop pulling pints. If I was working as a waiter and I had to stop serving tables, I, as a human being, would do my nut.
Yeah.
Whatever about the financial implications of it, the intellectual, emotional, daily demands that are so welcome to be snatched from me like that for a long time, I don't know how people are doing it.
Yeah.
That's why you're here. Tell us, how do we tell people it's going to be okay, Keith? How do you mind the mind?
Yeah. So I think a couple of things. I think it's okay to acknowledge that we're frightened.
Good.
I think if we pretend we're not, or pretend everything is okay, or pretend it's normal, whatever it is, it's not normal. And so I think it's okay to say, look, I'm worried by this. I get frightened by this. And then actually to tell someone else. And you tell a friend, you tell a family member, and we're all talking about COVID nonstop. But we're talking about it like facts, you know, the details.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
The 50 people in, you know, Limerick. Well, okay. And actually what we need to do is talk about, okay, I feel really worried about this because I don't know when my job is coming back.
Mm.
Or I feel really worried about this because I've got an elderly parent and I really want them to be okay. And you'll find that the other person is in exactly the same boat. This, you know, the whole country is in the same boat. And so actually getting that bit out is really, really important. And then I think if, as a country, we can do this, it's anxiety, it's awful, but it's manageable. And so if we can bring ourselves through it and one other person, say, okay, I'm going to bring myself through it this winter, I'm going to bring one other person through this anxiety this winter, then we can do that.
Tell me about Dunkirk.
Yeah, well, so if you think about the Battle of Dunkirk, for all the history buffs out there, you know, there's nothing good going to happen at a Dunkirk, but we can make it less bad. Okay. And that happens in two ways. One is the big battleships, and that's actually huge government funding for mental health.
Okay.
And everyone in the country knows that mental health has never had proper funding, that there's waiting lists in every service, you know, child, adult, older adult. And that actually it needs to be funded now because there's going to be a lot of people who needed services. There are always a lot of people who needed services. There's going to be a lot more people who needed services over the winter. And then the other part of Dunkirk is the little boats.
Mm.
And that's all of us. And that we can bring somebody with us in one boat. And we don't have to bring the whole world. And we don't have to change everything we're doing. But we can bring one person through the winter. And I think we probably know among our colleagues or our family or our neighbours, who the person is who might need that.
How do we do it? How do we bring them?
We do it with simple human things. So the first thing is cups of tea, contact in whatever safe way is possible.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not a cup of tea, it's a Zoom, it's a text, it's a letter. I know I heard the show yesterday and, you know, people sending lovely letters to each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is something from a different era, but how nice that would be to receive. Mm. And that we can do human contact just in a different way, in a different format.
You know, Anthony Fauci, I was saying, is going to be on the Late Late tomorrow. I'm intrigued to see what he has to say. But he said that coronavirus will be imprinted on the personality of our nation, America, obviously, for a very long time. What is it imprinting on our nation? It's probably too soon to say because it's so very much in it and we're looking into a second wave. What's it doing to Ireland psychologically, Keith?
I think we don't know.
Okay.
I think that's the first thing. We're slap bang in the middle of it.
Yeah.
But I think it's very fair to call it a collective trauma. So that doesn't mean everyone is traumatised. It doesn't mean everyone has PTSD. But it does mean the shells are landing. And that we're all experiencing the reverberations from that. And we don't quite know what that will be like in 2 or 3 years' time when it's over.
I think uncertainty is a word I've just written down because, you know, when I went to the barber yesterday on the basis that I got caught short when they shut the barbers the last time. I was on TV with the hair getting longer. I was laughing. I said, right, just in case they are going to lock it down more in the next few weeks, I'll just go down and just sort that out. And he said, you're the third in today, saying the same thing. So I felt less alone, weirdly, in my madness. Mm. But the point I'm making is that the uncertainty of you can't make plans now, which is very peculiar. But I'm not talking about holidays and stuff like that. That's the easy stuff. But things like getting your hair cut or wondering, going to the pub, I can't meet my siblings now, which I do all the time for other together we might go for a pint or whatever because different households and so on. So this not a sacrifice. People are in much worse situations. I'm just talking about my own little bits and pieces of things, little micro nuisances.
I think we shouldn't diminish those things.
Yeah, well, they're big to me.
Micro things, they make up our lives.
Yes,
and everyone has those micro things.
Mm.
And that those micro things are the things that have been chipped away. And it's absolutely true, other people have suffered much worse than that.
Yes, yes.
But it doesn't mean that the other things aren't important. I think there's a very Irish thing going, it's not, it's just this thing, it's just this thing. And going, no, actually not seeing my siblings, not getting my hair cut, not knowing what the next 3 weeks is going to bring, that's very troubling.
I think a lot of anxiety comes also from I've noticed people in their groups of friends or family that there's one sort of crazy horse who's drunk the Kool-Aid of anti-COVID, COVID denier, and they're just not into it. They're not. They simply don't want it. It's they've gone kind of conspiratorial, a bit mad. They're there too, and that causes a bit of dysfunction and certainly a little testiness in friendships.
Oh, definitely. I think COVID in general has caused a little bit of testiness because some people will follow the rules, some people will half follow the rules, and as you said, there'll be other people who'll be actively going against it.
Actively.
And my own impression of that is I don't think in terms of health that'll make any difference in the long term.
Yeah.
When the vaccine comes, I think it'll be 99.99% of the population who are going to get it. There'll be queues around the block for the vaccine. But what I've noticed from working with some of my patients is it makes them really anxious to think that there's people out there who are actively trying to undermine the health of everybody else.
Yes.
And so they might never have met one of those people.
Mm.
But just knowing that there's people, who won't wear a mask in a shop and that the only person they're hurting there is the person with the health condition or the older person who is anxious for their health.
What do you say, Keith, to the management of this anxiety? How do we, on a day-to-day, say, all right, if you find yourself, let's say we're heading out of the harbour in Dunkirk and the waters are getting choppy, what do we do to kind of contain it?
So I think there's 7 things.
Oh, great, okay.
I think you need to know your own anxiety. So the thing that makes you anxious might be different from the thing that makes me anxious. And so knowing what is it. So you may walk into the shops perfectly happily, I might find the shops really nerve-wracking.
Mm.
And so knowing, okay, this is the thing that I find difficult. Knowing your anxiety goes up and down. It's not the same in all situations and not the same with all people. And going, okay, and you're kind of making a friend of your anxiety. Said, okay, this is the bit that I find hardest. This is, what I find really tricky. So that's the first thing, knowing that this isn't absolutely universal and all the time. The second bit is minding the body.
Mm-hmm.
So anxiety is essentially an adrenaline response. It's too much adrenaline in the body. The thing that worked is the very best, most effective, most medically trialed, best evidence is exercise. Now, lots of our exercise has been taken away. Five-a-side is gone and lots of team sports is gone. But actually, we can walk, we can run, we can swim. And that those are really important things. We can do yoga on the floor. We can do Pilates by Zoom. That actually bringing our anxiety down physically is
Great.
Really, really important.
Right.
The cheapest way of doing that is breathing.
Okay. Taking a deep breath.
Taking a deep breath and slowing our heart rate down. And often we do the opposite, that when we start to get anxious, we start to think more, do more. Oh, my God, what am I going to do? How am I going to fix this? What do I do next? Actually, when we notice our heart rate go up like that, slowing the whole process down.
Okay. Keep going. You said 7.
Yeah. Something about knowing our own beliefs about
COVID.
So if I think if I'm exposed in any way, I'm going to die. That's going to be a real, that's a belief that's going to make me very anxious.
Okay, so educate yourself.
Educate yourself. Notice your own thought process.
Okay.
And then comparing that to reality. Like, yeah, this is a really serious illness, but actually my chances of dying are really low. The chances of getting it from touching the tap that someone else has touched is really low. Mm. The chances of touching it from touching an ATM is really low. And I bring those examples because those are examples that have been brought to me.
Yes.
That people have got really anxious about. I go, no, okay, this is, it's possible, but actually it's a really low chance. And working through my own worries.
Okay.
I think fourthly, we need to protect our identity. If we're a Dubs fan and there's no Dubs matches, we need to find a way to keep connected with what the team are doing, with what's going to go on next season. We need to connect with the people we'd normally go to Hill 16 with. We need to keep that part of who we are. You need to see your siblings. You'll see them in a different way, distanced, in the back garden or over Zoom. But that part of your micro, that part of your life, mm-hmm. that needs to keep going. We can't allow those things to slip away.
You know, I laugh and say this, I've said it before, but when I couldn't get to go and see Paul McCartney, my beloved Beatle, last summer, during the summer, I simply put one of his old concerts on YouTube on a screen, and with my loved ones, we gathered around and had drinks, and we went to the concert.
Yeah.
The COVID way.
And it was great. I'm sure you loved it.
It was one of my favourite nights this summer.
Yes, absolutely. And everything will be different. So I think trying to hold on to what we would have done in 2019 isn't going to happen. But we can take all of those things, take the important bit out of it, and do it.
Okay, point five, Keith.
So we are thinking a lot about COVID. It's okay to think a little bit less about COVID.
Yes. This is one of my favourite points because, I mean, I know we're talking about it on the radio, but we're also trying to talk about the good sides of minding ourselves.
Yeah.
And this is why I love reading. This is why I love watching, Irish Pickers or Only Connect or the programmes that bring me somewhere else, Keith.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul McCartney, sport, all of those things.
Yeah.
That actually, we don't need a news update every 3 hours.
Yes.
We don't need to check the news from the US or from Taiwan. We don't need, to see the COVID tracker every evening.
Yeah, I do all of those things, by the way. I watch the US news all the time. I watch the COVID, like the 6-1 news is like, where are the numbers? Where are the numbers? Where are the numbers? Now, I do try to temper it a little bit. And I hope when I'm interrupting you a little bit by saying this, I hope I'm reflecting what a lot of other people are probably doing. So I keep going. My apologies.
No, but I think it's a little bit addictive. I think the numbers are addictive.
Yes.
And the information is addictive.
Yes.
And I think we're trying to manage our anxiety through information.
Yeah.
The more I know about this, the better I'll be able to control it. And actually, the more I know about it, the more hours I spend thinking about it. And the more hours, that's the thing I talk to with the person that I'm meeting or whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
And actually, we have a whole life outside of this. And we read books, and we see people, and we do jobs, and all of that is still happening. And so one of the things is actually, on a psychological level, starving COVID of time and space.
Good. So,
okay, I need to know a certain amount of information. I'm not going to put my head in the sand, but I'm going to watch the 6-1 news, and that's it. Or I'm going to listen to Morning Ireland, and that's it. And actually, that's enough information to make all the healthy decisions we need to make.
Point six.
We've sort of said it, but we have to maintain our social connections.
Okay, so keep the all hailing frequencies open.
We've never, in the entire history of humanity, had so many ways of talking to people.
True.
And actually, we need to use all of them. And it's not the same as a hug. It's not the same as being in someone's kitchen. It's not the same as being in the snug of, a great pub.
Yeah.
But look, we're not going to be able to do it alone. And obviously, the health advice is spot on. It's asking us to be in much smaller groups. But we're not going to be able to survive psychologically in these tiny groups.
And finally?
And then anything unnecessary we're doing to keep ourselves safe. And this is kind of a nuanced idea. But if you remember back in April, when we didn't really know anything.
Yeah.
And we were, I was putting Dettol on the courgettes when they came in from the shop. The libraries had recommendations not to microwave your books. People were doing lots of extra things to keep themselves safe.
Yeah.
And we need to do all the basic things to keep ourselves safe. But the more we add to that, the more anxious we'll get. So So if we need to wash our hands 10 times a day, that's totally reasonable. If we're washing our hands 100 times a day, that's not going to make us feel safer. It's going to make us feel more anxious.
Yeah. Barbara's just on to say, could you have Keith on every morning, please? Common sense and positivity personified. Well said, Barbara. You're right. I've worked as a tech in the local pub for 20 years. I miss the interaction with the customers at the counter who've all become my friends over the years. And now with table service only, I feel like a robot. It feels like I'm in a room full of people on my own. It can take a toll on your mood. And I hate when I hear someone telling a good story and I can't join in because I feel like they're sitting back and I'm behind the counter and I may as well be behind a brick wall. Another says, I'm back at work after a long absence and I'm extremely stressed. I do Pilates, I do breathing techniques, but nothing seems to work long term. I'll just do a few, Keith. I'm so anxious about bringing my daughter back to Dublin for college. Another, listening to Keith, it's like we're all in the same ocean but on different boats. Another says, thanks for talking about the mundane that we're missing via COVID. I desperately miss our local Am-Dram group here in Donabate and Portrane. It's just desperate thinking about a winter, possibly without our rehearsals and community spirit. So thanks. This is the first time I've admitted how much, says Sandra, that bothers me. It didn't seem like much, but I'm grateful for the chance you've given us to admit this. So stay well, and talking about it helps. Yeah, good point she makes where, you know, I feel almost guilty saying to you that I missed this, that and the other. And you were saying, no, don't. That's your thing.
That's your identity. That's your life.
Yeah. That's same with Sandra and the Am-Dram.
And the barman and the person who's doing the Am-Dram. That's your life. And that's been taken away. Yeah. And of course that's going to be a huge loss.
Yeah. So don't feel bad about missing something that's important to you.
And I think it's pretty important to say, to come in to your loved one and go, I really miss drama.
Yeah, I miss pulling pints.
I miss drama on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry I'm not going out the door.
Yeah, I like that. Keith, listen, let's talk again and keep that lovely message up because it's important and we'll get people to maybe listen back to that to this interview on podcast. A very useful one if your family or friends who are anxious, they could listen back to it. But we'll stay in. What's your new son's name?
Niall.
Oh, Niall, great name.
Good name.
Congratulations to you and your family,
Keith.
Very, very nice to see you, or rather talk to you again, and wish you well. We'll talk soon.
Talk to you soon.
That's great. Thank you very much. That's Dr. Keith Gaynor, Senior Clinical Psychologist. He's based in St. John of God's Hospital there in Stillorgan, and Assistant Professor, indeed, in Clinical Psychology at the School of Psychology at UCD. John of God's, meanwhile, running the Living Well with the New Normal outpatient support program. And Keith actually is an author as well, wrote a book called Protecting Mental Health. We put all details on our Facebook page for you this morning so you can follow him. He's a rocket science and a great person. Right, it's 9:53.